Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Juice Podcast. We are into the thick of it, good people. We are in the nitty-gritty of NFL and NCAA. Actually, we're at the tail end of NCAA now. We'll talk about that a little bit as our squad, the Ohio State Buckeyes, will be going up against Notre Dame this Monday. Got a lot of playoffs games going on. We'll have some, share some thoughts about those as well. I'm your Jose, the Fantasy Football Fiend, and I'm with my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, everyone.
All right. So, yeah, a lot to get into, but before we do that, just a quick reminder, housekeeping rules, if you will. Please make sure that you follow us on YouTube at The Gospel STP. If you haven't followed us or subscribed on whichever apps that you may use to listen to the podcast, please do that. It takes 2 seconds and it helps us out a great deal. Lets us know where people are listening to us the most. So we might be able to do a couple of little, you know, giveaways and things of that nature, but we want to make sure that we are aiming that in the right direction. With that being said, let's hop right into it. What's the good word of the week, BK?
Well, it's NFL divisional playoff time, as you know, Zay. One of the best weekends of the year when it comes to sports. Four key matchups this weekend on the docket. We have Houston traveling to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. We have Baltimore and Buffalo in a great clash there. Washington at Detroit. And, of course, the LA Rams in Philly. Curious, what is your breakdown of these matchups and who you got?
Well, the first two games, Houston against Kansas City and Baltimore against Buffalo, that's going to be grown man football. The temperature is going to be really, really low. The snow will be worse in Buffalo. The temperature will be worse in Kansas City. They're labeling it as possibly the third coldest game in NFL history, which Kansas City, I think, may have the number one or two spot already for the coldest game. Yeah, people were losing limbs the last time it was this cold in Kansas City, and they decided to go to a game. So, again, this is going to be grown man football, and I don't know that the Texas team will be ready to play in this. Baltimore versus Buffalo, here's the thing. There's a certain nickname that has been given to one of the star players of the Baltimore Ravens that if it holds true, we may see something that isn't predicted right now. There's a young man by the name of Derrick Henry, and around this time of year, we get to calling him the Yeti. If you got to deal with the Yeti and turn around and deal with Lamar Jackson, and it's a game where the weather's kind of opposed, so you won't necessarily be able to use your passing game against them. If it's a run versus a run, give me Lamar and Derrick over Josh and James. That's just where my head is as far as that's concerned. If it's a running game, give me the best running, the best rushing team in the NFL. Washington, Detroit. I was just talking to somebody about this afternoon, and I think I talked myself into picking someone that I didn't pick before. There's a couple of things. There's the Vegas aspect of it. There's the aspect that one team's defense has like close to 20 people on IR. Then you have the aspect of the other team playing its best ball right now and having Cool Hand Luke as their quarterback. So I'm not saying Washington will win the game, but in the words of BK, you can win a couple of dollars if you put your money in the right place. And their point spread moved by 4. I can't remember the last time I saw that happen without a major injury. And you're giving that team with one of the hottest offenses going up against a team that has a depleted defense, almost a 10-point spread. I honestly feel like Washington can beat Detroit, to be honest with you. But 10 points, no, that's just ridiculous. Rams versus Philly, hear me out on this, BK, okay? I feel like the Rams are set up to win. I'm not saying they're going to win, but if you know, I take notice and pay attention to detail. The reason I say that is, have you noticed when the Rams play, they're always giving their condolences and their heartfelt concerns for the city of Los Angeles. Did you know they did that same thing when Katrina happened and New Orleans won the Super Bowl? Did the same thing when September 11th happened and the Giants won the Super Bowl? I'm not saying that there is a guarantee here. All I'm saying is I see a little bit of a trend. And whoever America is behind, like full-fledged behind, they tend to get a couple of calls to go their way in the playoffs. That's just what I've seen. And I don't think the Rams and Philadelphia are as far apart as some people would like to believe. The Rams, actually, in my humble opinion, I'm going to say this. I know I'm going to get hate mail on this. The Rams have the better offense. They have the better quarterback. They have some Verse is right now vying for defensive player of the year. They have some young studs on defense that is almost making you forget that they lost the best, arguably one of the best defenders in the NFL in general. I was kind of hoping that when the playoffs came around, Aaron Donald would be like, hey, I'm just playing. I'm not retired. I'll be back, but not so much. But they're playing good defense. They have one of the better offenses. I'm going to pick the Rams. I'm going to pick the Rams over Philly. I'm going to pick Detroit in a close game, but Washington to cover. I'm going to pick Baltimore, and I'm going to pick Kansas City.
So I'm not mad at that. I was expecting to be able to kind of tear you apart on this, but I think you did well. So the first game, I think the easiest game to pick is Kansas City over Houston. Mahomes is not going to turn it over 17 times like Herbert did. It's a home game for the Chiefs. They're well rested. I know people will say, well, they could be rusty or whatever. You're the two-time defending champions. I think you have Andy Reid and Mahomes. I think you'll be all right.
They'll be all right.
The other thing that concerns me for Houston that really affects their balance is Mixon is likely not to play for them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So without him running the ball, like, it's going to be all on C.J. Stroud. And I don't know, in the cold against that pass rush, you want to be one-dimensional. So I think that makes it a little easier. I like Kansas City, no problem there. So all you Swifties out there, no hate mail. Your boy is going to make it to the conference title again, so I don't want to hear it. In the game I'm most intrigued for, not because my favorite team is playing, because we'll get to that, but in Baltimore and Buffalo, I think that's the game of the weekend. And I'm going to do something that I normally don't do, which is I'm going to change who I think is going to win.
Okay, I'm intrigued, waiting with bated breath at this point. What you got?
So, as of a couple weeks ago, with Buffalo being at home and it being a weather game, I would have thought that the Bills would win this game. But I really think there's an adage in football that comes down to, can you run the ball and can you stop the run in the playoffs? And Derrick Henry's a beast. And I don't know that I really want to try to tackle him when it's frigid cold outside for four quarters. Like, that just sounds like a miserable proposition. So I'm glad I'm going to sit at home and be warm and watch this. And I hope it snows 2 feet, because I like snow games in the playoffs, me being warm and comfortable at home. But I just have a sneaking suspicion that the Ravens are going to find some way to win this game. And I also can count on McDermott finding some way to probably lose the game. So give me the Ravens in a close one. But I like Baltimore to win. I'm going to change the pick there.
Okay.
I'm going to skip to Washington at the last part of this. But Rams and Philly. I've said for 2 months, publicly, privately, and anyone who's willing to listen, that I thought that Kansas City and Philly would meet in the Super Bowl, only because I thought Philly and Kansas City have the most complete rosters. Mm-hmm. They're the most talented rosters left in the playoffs. Now, that said, Hurts is coming off a concussion. He didn't play very well at all against the Packers. And had Jordan Love not turned into a postseason charity, I'm not sure that the Eagles would have survived that game. Their defense is legit. I mean, their Eagles defense is phenomenal. And their run game with Barkley is amazing. They got Elliott at kicker, and they're going to be tough to beat at home. But the Rams, if you throw out their meaningless Week 18 loss, the Rams are 8-2. And of the team that have, one of these teams has a Super Bowl winning quarterback, it's not the Eagles. I'm going to pick the Eagles to win a close game here just because I think talent in the home field will be enough to get them to the finish line. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Rams won because the Rams play aggressive defense. They're playing hot. They have weapons across the field. I trust their quarterback in the postseason more. Yeah. Stafford is a proven winner. Hurts has not won a Super Bowl. I like Stafford and his weapons there. Mm-hmm. McVay can flat out coach. He's a Super Bowl winning champion coach, so we can't say he can't win big games.
True.
I just think the Eagles are going to sneak this one out in the last game, Washington and Detroit. So I'm not going to talk about the Vegas aspect because we'll hear about this a little later. But I will say, everything is set up for Washington. They have the better quarterback in Jaden Daniels. I don't know of any franchise right now that would rather have Goff over Daniels. And please understand, Goff had a very good season. I am not hating on him. He was great. Daniels is just better. Why? Because I trust his mental toughness better. He doesn't turn the ball over, see Goff's 5-interception game. He had another 3-interception game. Daniels doesn't do that. He can also extend plays with his legs. And though he's proven the moment isn't too big for him. The other thing is, Washington has nothing to lose. They're one of three teams this weekend that have absolutely nothing to lose. The Texans, nothing to lose. The Rams, nothing to lose. And the Commanders, nothing to lose. They're a 6 seed on the road against the top seed, who went 15-2. The Lions are loaded, but they're banged up on defense, as you mentioned. And here's the other thing. Washington's blueprint for success is the same thing they did against Tampa Bay. Control the ball. If they can, I don't know how well they're going to be able to run the ball, but if they can run Daniels with his options, short controlled passing, kind of West Coast passing, take your deep shots. Keep the best defense is a great offense. Definitely. And with all the injuries to Detroit, Washington most definitely can score. The question I have for Detroit out there is that this is only the second year in a 25 years that Detroit's actually had postseason expectations.
Yeah.
They're the top seed. They had an emotional home win over Minnesota to win the division, clinch the top seed in the bye. They've been sitting around for 2 weeks. Washington's won 5 or 6 in a row, counting the postseason. Washington's won 5 straight games in the last possession. Okay. So they've won close games. And here's the other thing. All the pressure's on Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
They've been sitting around for 2 weeks, everyone talking about how great they are. And now you have to deal with Washington, who has absolutely nothing to lose. I just wonder, can Detroit handle that? I have my doubts.
Just to piggyback on that, BK, before we move on, if Detroit starts out slow and they have to play from behind against that offense, that's normally the situation where you see Goff go into interception mode. So to your point, if it does take them a little while just to kind of kick the dust off and Washington is firing on all cylinders, you give that offense, let's say, a 7-point lead that they can ride until they really get comfortable in the game, you might have a problem in Detroit. I'm just saying, you might have a little – And I do have Detroit winning by a small margin, but I can absolutely see Washington pulling this thing out.
Well, just to piggyback what you said. Mm-hmm. So in the NFL, you know I'm a numbers guy. In the NFL, there is no bigger advantage in pro sports than home field advantage in the NFL. 64% number one. The home teams went 5-1 last week, with Washington being the lone road win, which is 83%. Three of these four games, the home team has a true home field advantage. Arrowhead is very difficult to play. Buffalo is very difficult to play. Philly is definitely very difficult to play. Detroit? Is really anybody afraid to go to Detroit?
I've never heard that before, as long as I've been watching the NFL.
Right. No one's worried about, it's like going to Tampa Bay. Although, you know, either way, you're going to have good weather. Tampa Bay, warm weather. Detroit, a dome. In either case, there is absolutely no home field advantage for Detroit, which also makes it easier for Washington to be able to navigate that. They don't have to deal with weather, and they don't have to deal with home field. I think that's an advantage for them. I'll get to my pick later. We'll move along.
What we got up next, my guy?
So, staying with the NFL theme, Sam Darnold, we may have talked about him once or twice, led the Vikings to a terrific 14-3 regular season and the playoffs. Should Mr. GM Goggles, should the Vikes re-sign him or turn the reins over to J.J. McCarthy?
Well, BK, in Zay fashion, I'm going to reject the premise. They shouldn't re-sign him. They should not re-sign him either. They should give him the franchise tag, prove it to me again, and if you do, I'll trade the rookie instead of trading you and actually pay you. It's a pretty simple formula to me. Sam Darnold is legit the reason why a franchise tag was created. I don't know that I want to give you 5 years for you to start seeing ghosts again in year two. If you can produce this type of a season and JJ doesn't show that he's as good or better than you, which means I would have a quarterback on a rookie contract versus one that I'm actually paying, which means I can pay a few other people and possibly stay in the race as far as talent is concerned. I see no downside in this situation to franchising Sam Darnold. And there's only upside that you have as a team, whether he wins or loses. If he comes out and he gives the same type of performance that he did this year, cool. You deserve to get paid. And we'll see what we can get for J.J. McCarthy, young quarterback, on a rookie deal. Somebody's going to pay for that guy. Trust and believe. But then the other end of the spectrum is also true. If you stink up the joint, I already have your replacement waiting in the ring, and I didn't do what Cleveland did and pay a quarterback long-term that can't even win short-term. That's where I'm at with the Darnold situation. There's no need to sign him to a long-term deal right now.
So I definitely can see that. You know where I'm going with this. I would let him walk.
Let him go.
Sam, I appreciate all you've done for our team this year and organization. Appreciate everything. It was a fantastic storybook season. I wish you well in your journey as you move on. Here's the thing. All joking aside, they have a great coaching staff in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're loaded at skill position players with Jefferson and Addison and Hawkinson and Aaron Jones. They're loaded at defense.
Yeah.
I say this to say that with all due respect to Sam Darnold, he was not the reason why they won 14 games. He was a game manager. And if I can take J.J. McCarthy, who's a proven college winner, haven't seen him do anything in the pros, so don't know. He could be awful or get injured. But what I'll say is, if you give that supporting cast with what I've seen from McCarthy and how they're able to coach up quarterbacks, see Sam Darnold, I would rather save that money, use the rookie contract, and further load up that team, much like I would do with Washington. Right. And the question isn't Washington, but Daniels was on a rookie quarterback. They won a lot of games. load up that roster in a win now mode. I would love to see what Minnesota looks like not paying Darnold and building around McCarthy. Again, I see what you're saying, and I don't disagree with the logic there. To me, this is more preference. The only real mistake is if you sign him to some extension, like 3-5 years, that's absolutely ridiculous. You're literally letting money in fund.
Agreed.
One last NFL point for the good word of the week. We get to talk about your buddy, Mr. Belichick. I found this very interesting. We talked about on this show how he became the head coach of North Carolina college football team. But in fact, as we peel away the onions, he in fact has not become the coach of North Carolina because he never signed his contract. So at this point, he's not the coach of anywhere. And with all these openings available, Raiders, Jags, Giants, Saints, oh yeah, and the Cowboys, what do you think your former coach is going to be doing, Zay?
He's going to be coaching North Carolina. That's what he's going to be doing. Like, Bill Belichick has been used as a bargaining chip almost. The Raiders are the only team that I've heard that are even possibly making a phone call. I can't even necessarily say kicking the tires because he hasn't been interviewed. And I think that that's a backup if Ben Johnson, the current OC of Detroit, decides to go elsewhere, because it's looking like currently there's going to be a pairing between Las Vegas and Ben Johnson. If Bill Belichick don't get picked up by Las Vegas, I don't see another spot that is a good fit for him. The Saints have all but already hired Aaron Glenn. The Jets are going to do something stupid. I don't know what it's going to be, but it'll be stupid. who else? The Jaguars. I don't really have a sense yet of what they're going to do. I think that they may end up grabbing a guy that may not even be available yet. Maybe McDermott goes out and craps the bed and then he's available. And they say, well, we'd love to be in the shoes of the Buffalo Bills for the next few years and win a playoff game and get sent home. We'll be happy with that for the length of your contract. I don't know. But I if the Rams beat Philly, I think that job will be available. And that's really the only job that I can see Belichick being a good fit for, because you don't really have to coach the offense. You just have talent as far as players are concerned. And you have a defense that a Bill Belichick type could maximize to the umpteenth power. I don't really see any other teams that are built for the mind of a Bill Belichick, if that makes sense. Unless Buffalo says, hey, maybe you can get us over the hump because we have a few offensive players. You can bring in your guy to hopefully bring the offense along. But if you can make our defense anywhere close to our offense, we already have a winning team. It would have to be a situation like that. But if you're asking me where I believe he's going to be, I believe he's going to be in North Carolina. And that a part of his contract is, if he takes the job, that his son is in line to be the next head coach, no matter how long he stays there. So I think he'll end up staying there, if only for his son, and then maybe go NFL next year.
It's interesting. I could see both Buffalo and Philly opening. From what I read earlier today, it feels like the Raiders' job, although Brady seems to be very in on the decision-making for coach there, which would open the door to Belichick coming there.
Would it?
But what's that?
Would it?
I think so. They've mended their fences.
Okay.
They've gone out of their way to kind of do their little love fest. So, but I think the Raiders' job actually will come down to Ben Johnson and Pete Carroll. That was a couple of places today.
I would take old Pete over Bill in that situation easily.
Well, and the biggest reason why I would do that if I was the Raiders, I would actually hire Pete Carroll anyway. And the reason why is because even though I know Carroll's in his early 70s.
Is he? I thought he was in his like mid-70s, close to the 80.
He's going to bring his energy. You know, he's got a lot of energy. Yeah. And the Raiders need that, like, they need that oomph that, you know, like, they need. And unfortunately, Belichick's never going to be the rah-rah guy that's going to inspire you to have fun.
Not ever.
So they'll be watching videos at 3 a.m. trying to figure out how to get better. So I think he'll stay in North Carolina, but I do. If Philly or Buffalo opens, I think all bets are off.
Okay.
Last but not least, in the good word, we get to talk about your favorite team in college football, the Ohio State Buckeyes. You know, the Buckeyes, 8.5 point favorites, depending on where you look, against Notre Dame. My question to you is two parts. What's your breakdown of who you got? You knew that was coming. But also, win or lose, is this Marcus Freeman's last game for the Irish?
I have the Buckeyes. They just more talent. And this isn't a homer pick, if you will. They're just simply the better team. Notre Dame has won plenty of games, but they haven't shown me anything when it counts the most. If you start out against Ohio State the way you started last week against Penn State, good luck would have still been the game from halftime. You're going to be giving the "we play the game, not the score" speech at halftime if you come out looking like you did against Penn State. Marcus Freeman, I don't think he's going anywhere. He just added a whole nother contract to his tenure at Notre Dame, should he choose to stay. And let's think about it for a minute. Unless it's like his dream or something to coach in the NFL, what does he get by leaving the Irish? We saw what happened when Brian Kelly left. The grass wasn't greener. This should be Brian Kelly's team right now. But you chose to go to LSU. All right. Well, have fun. But Marcus, I would not. Now is not the time to leave if you're him. I think you got money. You have plenty NIL opportunities. I think that Notre Dame could go into next year and the years after with more talent than they've had. They only have one 5-star athlete on the entire team. One. That changes just by getting to the championship. So win, lose, or draw, now wouldn't be the time if I'm him. And I'm sorry, you guys. You may hear me stopping in between words. I got the hiccups. I don't know where they came from. So, yeah, I apologize about that. We're gonna thug through it, though.
I'll get more into the pick later. You'll definitely hear more about this at a later segment. But what I will say is this. Notre Dame's had a great year. They've exceeded expectations. They rebounded tremendously from an embarrassing home loss to Northern Illinois. They have railroaded everybody along the way until Penn State. Beat down after beat down after beat down for Notre Dame.
To be fair, the only team they played other than Penn State was like USC, who we found to be a fraud anyway. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yes. However, you can only play who's on your schedule.
Facts.
And I'd much rather them beat their pansy schedule convincingly than struggle. So I will say this about Ohio State. If you rewind what I said and you can go back to the gospel archives, when we talked about what team playing in the first round of the playoffs was I most confident could make the national title game or win it, I said Ohio State, because they're the most talented roster in the playoffs. I also said, to be clear, that they wouldn't win the national title because of Ryan Day. Now, I've also successfully bet Ohio State every round of the playoffs, and my bank account thanks me for that. That said, I'll tip my pick a little bit by saying this. there is such a talented disparity between Ohio State and Notre Dame that the only team that the only thing that can beat Ohio State is Ryan Day.
Yes, absolutely. So
if Ryan Day doesn't show up, stays in the locker room, takes a vacation, maybe he'll find a 24-year-old girlfriend. He can hang out with Belichick. All I need him to do is not be around the game for 3 hours, and this game is a beatdown. So if he gets involved or decides it's Michigan 2.0 or Penn State the first time, then all bets are off. But if he coaches how he has the last 3 games, this game's over in a hurry.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
Yeah.
Do we think that it is possible that Ryan Day has turned over a new leaf? Or is he the same old guy with window dressing that's going to lose to Michigan next year? And I don't even care if he wins the championship. I want him gone.
I think a leopard doesn't change their spots. Coach Day has proven as an offensive coordinator at Ohio State that he was pedal to the metal and was very aggressive. He would score 60 on you if he could. Head coach CEO Day, not so much. And if I were to guess, someone had a conversation with Coach Day about prior to the playoffs about how you might want to let Chip Kelly do what he's supposed to do, because the offense, how it's looked the last few weeks, is exactly how Chip Kelly coaches offense.
Agreed. Yeah.
Going one last bullet point here, Freeman. If I were to bet on this, I would say Freeman stays.
Okay.
But I will say, I think there is more than a better's chance that he takes the Bears job.
Okay. More than a better's chance.
Yes.
Okay. I'll consider that.
And the only reason why I say that, Zay, is this. Because we talk about this all the time in coaching. At some point, you're never going to do better than what you did this season.
Okay.
Do you really see a Freeman-led team who, by the way, not long ago was fighting for his job there?
Yeah.
And on the hot seat. Do I think he's more of the coach that's fighting for his job, or more of the coach that's going to build a lasting power there? And most coaches want to challenge themselves at the highest level, which is, in this case, the NFL. I don't think there's a path where he'll be able to do better than this game. So I think leaving out on quote-unquote top would be a smart move to go to the NFL.
There's something to be said for going out on top versus allowing yourself to come back to the pack, and then now no one's offering you the opportunity. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. Our Truth and Nothing But the Truth. One of my favorite segments, because I get to speak my truth. We have a few dandies for the listening audience, for the congregation today. Go ahead and kick it off.
So I'm going to do something we normally don't do and kind of go in reverse order here.
Okay.
What would it, going along with the Buckeyes theme, what would a national title mean for Ryan Day's legacy? And will fans and the media change their feelings about him at all should he deliver a title? I knew you'd love this question. You're welcome.
I'm going to be honest with you, buddy. To give an analogy, when you've been in a relationship with someone for X amount of time, and in your mind, you've already exited said relationship, and then they kind of start to act right, it doesn't change the fact that in your mind, the relationship is already over. It might give you a little bit of cause for pause, which is And I know this is horrible to say that that's all a national championship would give me as far as Ryan Day is concerned. But I just don't feel, how would I say, to put it in a song, because you know I love my songs, BK, even if you and the audience don't like hearing them. But it's one of those you lost that lovely feeling type situations. Like, no matter how much you better yourself, you'll be great for the next person. Because in my mind, I've already moved on. Win the championship, guess what I'm not giving you? Full credit, because I believe that if you had been the one in charge, we wouldn't be here. So Chip Kelly's getting more in the confidence meter from me than what Ryan Day is by winning this. And if I'm Ryan Day, just to make sure that we're on the same page, if I win the championship, I might see if one of these NFL teams want me. Wouldn't make sense to go to another college. But people can see the natural progression in the NFL. And I just give him 2 years and he'll screw it up. Well, the one thing about it is, with there being a 12-team playoff, I don't see us ever not making the playoff. But that won't be the barometer anymore. It'll be, can you get us to that final weekend multiple times? Because we really don't want you here anyway. So we're looking for a reason to let you go. You know, when you start starting arguments out of nowhere, like, we didn't even have to argue about that. Yes, we did, because I really don't like you very much anymore. any straw that can break the camel's back, I'm pitching straws daily. We're going to see which one's going to break the back. Neither one of us wants to be the first to say goodbye, but I kind of really do want to be the first to say goodbye. That's the way I feel about Ryan Day.
Yeah, no, I'm all for that. From a legacy standpoint, I mean, you win a national title, that's never a bad thing on your resume.
Never.
However, the fans and the media won't change. The fans and media feel like you do, Zay, and rightfully so, which is, no matter what he does there, because of his repeated failures and unwillingness to change over and over again, people aren't going to forgive him. Nope. And it won't take but one bad game next year, or dumb loss, or Michigan beating him again to resurface all these things. Here's what I will say, going back to what, because I said this a few weeks ago, and I've had some friends think that I was dropped on my head as a child when I said this. If Ohio State wins a national title, I believe there's a puncher's chance that Day leaves Ohio State on his own. And I say that, in fact, it was a topic on our show a couple weeks ago. And I say this because he's openly and publicly said the toll the losing has had on his family, him and his family, and he's tired of his family going through the abuse and all the vitriol that he gets. Well, the easy answer is stop coaching like a scared jackass and you won't have that problem. At the end of the day, no pun intended, I can understand why he would just leave. A national title would be a win-win for everybody. Here's your parting gift, Ohio State and fans and university. I delivered you a title which you wanted, and I'm gone. You get a win-win. And I get a fresh start wherever that may be.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that at all.
Speaking of legacies, what would a three-peat mean for Mahomes in his quest to catch the GOAT, Mr. Tom Brady?
It would mean
Super Bowl title mean more for Lamar or Josh Allen? And the third part would be, what would a second title in 5 years mean for Matt Stafford's legacy?
For Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, it would give them a box check that hasn't been checked by anyone else in the NFL and has only been checked by very few teams in other sports. So I think what it would give Patrick Mahomes is it would give him a little bit of an advantage in the GOAT conversation, because he wouldn't have to get 7 titles. If he can get to 5 and have a three-peat, which Brady never had, and have sustained dominance for about as long as Brady did, and not only that, but his is going to be the kicker. Patrick Mahomes is going to outlast Andy Reid. Maybe he can get another ring with another coach. So then you can't give the majority of the credit to Andy Reid or Andy Reid's system. So as far as Patrick Mahomes is concerned, anytime you can put something on your resume that no one has, like no one at all, well, that definitely gives you a few notches on your belt as far as the GOAT conversation is concerned. As far as would a Super Bowl title mean more to Lamar or Josh Allen, I think it would actually mean more to Lamar. And the reason for that is I really don't hear too many people piling on Josh Allen and saying what he shouldn't be or can't be. Or I've never heard anyone say Josh Allen should be a wide receiver instead of a quarterback. I've never heard anyone say that all Josh Allen can do is run the ball, even when we're in a season where Lamar actually has more passing yards and passing touchdowns than Josh. I just tend to hear a lot of piling on for Lamar. And Josh is just like, oh, well, it must be the coach, or it must be his receivers, or it must be something or somebody else other than Josh. So I think the Super Bowl would kind of get people off Lamar's back. With Josh, it was just kind of be like, see, I told you so. And that's about it. And then
the Stafford.
Stafford, honestly, I don't think another title would do very much for his legacy. Okay, it would be like asking if Eli didn't get the second Super Bowl, would you look at him differently? I don't know a lot of people that was like, oh, well, since he got the second one, then he's the creme de la creme. Like, I don't really think people look at Stafford that way. Now, a Super Bowl has never hurt anyone's legacy, just so we're on the same page. But I don't think it would do as much for him as it would do for others. His claim to fame is the fact that he went to a team that had never won a Super Bowl, coming from another team that barely won at all, but people knew his talent, and he went out in there and won one. I don't think he could supersede that Super Bowl. So this Super Bowl would just be another trinket. It wouldn't outweigh what he's already done, humble opinion.
So I'll start there. I would put him, if he wins 2 in 5 years, I would put him in Eli territory. Two Super Bowls, you know, puts him in that tier, if you will. I also think it would ensure that he would retire after the season if he won a second title.
Okay.
Especially with all the injuries he's been battling in his age.
I can see that. They
win a title, he's it. That's it. As far as Lamar or Josh, that to me is a no-brainer. It would mean a lot more to Lamar for the reasons that you outlined. My question to you about that, though, is why do you think Lamar is much more scrutinized than Josh?
There's a couple of reasons. For one, people were touting Josh to be one of the next best things since day one of him coming into the NFL. People were trying to convince Lamar to be a wide receiver. So just the way they entered into the NFL, it was under two different lenses. And a lot of time when people see you as less than, you have to do way more than the person that is a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they felt that that person was going to do well. At any job you go to, right? If you have that one person that everyone was kind of rooting for because they just knew this person was going to do well, and then you have the other person that everyone felt like they shouldn't have got the job, but they're actually going out there and performing as well or better than everyone's quote unquote blue chipper. Well, people are going to find reasons to chip away at the guy that they didn't think could be successful. Other than that, they have to say that they were wrong, if that makes sense. And that's the biggest thing. People have to come to grips with the fact that they were wrong about the prospects of Lamar, versus patting themselves on the back for what they thought about Josh Allen. And that's also the same reason you aren't going to hear as much vitriol about Josh Allen, because those same talking heads would then be admitting that they were wrong about him. So a lot of times it's just whatever I can say to give credence to what I have already said.
The last part of the question, what would another title mean for Mahomes? I don't have a lot more to add than what you said there. A three-peat would be a huge deal. It would bring him closer to Brady with many years left to play in his career. So he would be rapidly closing the gap. Much like Brady, the thing that I respect the most about Mahomes, besides he plays the best when it matters most, is much like Brady's a winner. And, you know, he wins. In sports, in team games, the biggest thing that you're measured by is what are the results? Did you win or did you not? Brady won a whole hell of a lot. Mahomes is rapidly catching up, and he plays great when it matters. So be interesting to see how those careers, or his career, ultimately ends. What number does he get to? Well, last but not least, Zay, on our truth, a little going back to our old state here, a little Ohio subject matter. So the Browns were sued by Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, over the proposed move to Brook Park, citing the Modell law. I'm going to ask you your reaction to this and who will prevail. But for those who don't know, here's in Cliffy Cliff Note versions. This is what the Modell law says. It requires sports teams that play in taxpayer-funded stadiums to get permission to move from their home city or give 6 months' notice with a chance for the city or local investors to buy the team.
This, I think, is pretty straightforward. Did they give notice? Yes or no? No?
Yes.
You're sued. Like that. I mean, that's like, it's pretty straightforward as far as who should win the lawsuit, I'll say. And rich people do what they want to do. Like, this is like a 1% of the first world type of a problem. So I don't know that if given the 6 month time frame that they would have been able to pull together the investors and definitely not the city itself buying the team. But the question is, did they follow due process? If they did, the city of Cleveland is now crying over spilt milk. If they didn't, well, we're going to snatch a few dollars out your pockets on your way out the door. And I don't know if maybe the courts can say, hey, because you didn't do this, now you have to, and it's not going to be like a fine or a monetary amount that you got to give, and then you can just do what you want to do. What I would be suing for is the right to be able to get together a group of investors and buy the team. If that's not what you're going to do, you're just basically saying, you know, I want to kick some dust in your eyes as you walk away. Like you're not getting much out of it, but that's kind of where I am on that.
Yeah. I think ultimately that Haslam and the Browns are going to be able to move the team to Brook Park. And I think ultimately the reason falls down to the NFL and the owners are bigger than the city of Cleveland, and they have much stronger, powerful connections. And here's the thing. They're still staying in the same county. They're not moving them out of state. They're not changing counties. So I believe a reasonable court would say, well, we're in no danger of them moving the team out of state. They're staying in the same county. So other than it technically being in the city of Cleveland versus Brook Park, which is a suburb, what harm has really been done here?
I think the harm that they're looking at is being left on the hook to pay for a stadium that will no longer be in use. That's the only thing that I could see that they may be looking at.
But sooner or later, that stadium, because it was built literally on water or around it, isn't safe. It keeps sinking every year.
That would be the argument from the other side. We would have had to move somewhere any way you slice it, and this was the closest place that we could move to and make it make sense. So
correct. Well, that wraps up this week's The Truth. And now to our top five of something of our favorite of all time. This week, Zay, kick it off. What do we got?
Top five Super Bowl moments. And I have a feeling, a sneaky suspicion, if you will, several of these may overlap. Yeah, there's just some moments that I've been able to watch myself, not the before my time moments. They were just amazing moments. Like, they truly were amazing moments within the Super Bowl. I'll start out with number five. Being an Ohio State fan, there's nothing like seeing one of your guys successful. And when Santonio Holmes made that game-winning catch for Pittsburgh with about 43 seconds left on the clock, for me, that was a huge moment because Santonio Holmes was one of my favorite players in general coming out of Ohio State. So that was one of the moments that I was just like, wow, that just happened. So that's number five for me. What you got?
Well, I'm going to score some points with you in this segment because my number five is one of your boys, Malcolm Butler's goal line interception.
You just lost some points. That's my number one.
To preserve the Patriots' 28-24 win over the Seahawks in Super Bowl 49, a.k.a. run the damn ball, if you're a Seahawks fan. At any rate, what a tremendous play in a clutch moment.
Absolutely.
Belichick always talks about doing your job. Well, in this case, the Butler did it. What a great play and a great ending to a classic Super Bowl. Malcolm Butler, number five.
I'm 100% agree, but not that it's number five. But number four for me, Tracy Porter's pick six for New Orleans Super Bowl win. That was just one of those. It was one of those years. Like they New Orleans had been through a lot. A lot had been going through and done within the Superdome itself, and to come out of it with that win did a lot for the team, but even more so for the city. That was one of those, you know, might not happen again in a couple of lifetime type moments. So Tracy Porter's pick six for the win for New Orleans was my number four.
I can see it. You're not going to like my number four.
Maybe David, I won't. Maybe I'll surprise
David, you. David Tyree's helmet catch.
That was my number three.
On a broken play that set up, of course, the winning touchdown from Eli to Plaxico to upset the juggernaut undefeated Patriots in Super Bowl 42. Still can't believe he caught that ball. That was the craziest catch that I think I've ever seen.
Forget the catch. I still can't believe the referee didn't call the play dead when the man clearly had Eli in his. You know what? I'm in a good headspace about this. I'm not going to revisit it. Let's just say that should have been a sack. I'll leave it at that and I'll move on. But that's my number three. And it's because I'm not a hater. I understand the gravity of that moment. That moment took away a perfect season for only the second time in NFL history. So due to the sheer gravity of that moment, if you're a true NFL fan, and not a hater of 31 teams other than the one that you like, that has to be one of the most, you know, special moments, if you will, in Super Bowl history. So I can't deny that. That's one of those is what it is.
My number three, the man who I have as my number three quarterback of all time, Joe Cool, Joe Montana, delivering the game-winning touchdown with 34 seconds left to John Taylor, Montana to Taylor, as the Niners escape the Bengals 20-16 That is my number three. That was a clutch drive.
Agreed. Agreed, definitely. Number two for me, New England's comeback over Atlanta. The range of emotions that I went through in that game, I literally took a nap in like the second quarter. Don't hear what I'm not saying.
This is the Patriots.
This may, I see what you did there. I'm not saying I was the reason we won that game, but I think when I took that nap in the second quarter and I woke back up in the third, all I'm saying is that's when the team woke up. That's all I'm saying. It may not be causation. I'm just saying there's a little bit of correlation there. I went to sleep while they were sleeping, and when I woke up, we woke up together and took home a championship. That's all I'm saying, BK. That's the truth. That's what happened. That's literally what happened, BK. I will tell you
that they should send you a Super Bowl ring for your efforts.
It should.
And that was my number one. But my number two changed, I think, Super Bowl history.
Okay.
Bills kicker Scott Norwood, or as I like to call him, Scott Norwide, his wide right changed the history of the Bills and the NFL Super Bowl with that crushing 20-19 loss against the Giants. As you recall, the Bills lost that first Super Bowl after that missed kick and then got blown out of the next three Super Bowls. I'm convinced, had they won that first one, they might have added another one to their treasure chest, but they could never get over the hump after that crushing loss, and they still haven't won one to this day. So that's my number two.
And we both already stated what our number ones were. For me, that was the Malcolm Butler interception for the win. And only because that Super Bowl, we were actually having a Super Bowl party here at the house. And everyone had their jokes. Everyone was laughing. I'm the only Patriots fan in the room. The game was all but over. I was ready to go take a walk. I was ready to go calm myself down. And when Malcolm Butler caught that interception, I don't know exactly how I ended up halfway up the street. But all I know, true story, I was halfway up the street yelling and screaming. And it was funny because I could hear my other neighbors that they didn't know who was outside. They didn't know who, but they were definitely watching the Super Bowl as well. I could literally hear them laughing from the inside of their homes at the ruckus that I was making running up and down the street after that win. The range of emotions that I went through in a matter of about 30 seconds was ridiculous. We lost, and it's because Belichick did or didn't do this, that, or the third, so we just won. I told you we were going to win. So, yeah, it was just, yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget that night. That's all I can tell you. Number one for sure. So that pretty much wraps up the top five all time of our favorite thing. And that takes us into another one of my favorite parts of the show, because it's been winning me money all year. BK's best bets. BK, what we got?
First of all, this should be everyone's favorite segment because you all should be making tons of coin had you listened throughout since March of last year.
I can't disagree, BK.
Last week, I know on the show, 3-1, the lone loss, the Chargers. Personally, it was a 5-1 weekend, not counting the college game. So there you go. This week, couple teasers for you. I like the Chiefs -2 and the Eagles money line. The Eagles just need to win. The Chiefs need to win by a field goal. I think both of those things happen this weekend. Give me the home teams, Chiefs and Eagles at home. Teaser number one. I'm going to do something that I normally don't.
Wait. You said Chiefs and Eagles?
Chiefs and Eagles.
Gotcha. Okay.
The second one, and I normally don't duplicate one, but it just shows you the strength of this. So I'm going to take Kansas City again in a teaser, but this time we're going to go back to the team we talked about earlier, Washington. The line moved from 5.5 to 9.5. I'm going to tease it three key numbers. We're going to skip 10, 13, and 14. Give me the Chiefs -2 and the Commanders +15.5 to get it done this weekend. And don't worry, sports fans. It wouldn't be a national title game and a playoff game if I didn't give a pick there. As long as Ryan Day cannot be Ryan Day for 3 hours on Monday night, the Buckeyes are going to easily cover the 8 against Notre Dame. The coaching's not the same. The talent's not the same. Notre Dame is in a world of hurt. Think about what Bama did to Notre Dame a few years back when Alabama just ran roughshod over them. This is going to be a beating. And so give me the Buckeyes easily to cover -8. Chiefs -2. Eagles money line. Washington +15.5. Give me the Buckeyes -8. Those are the best bets for this weekend. The one game from a betting standpoint that I would have you stay away from is the one that I actually changed my pick on, which is the Ravens and the Bills. If you want to bet that, I would take Baltimore. Personally, I will tell you, I'm staying away officially. I think this game's going to be too close to call either way. And again, we're here to make money, not guess.
So shouldn't that put them on the teaser list if it's going to be that close?
Well, the problem I have with this is this. With the line changed from it opened Buffalo -1.5 to now Baltimore's -1.5. So if I tease at the 6, the Ravens are getting 4.5. The Bills would get 7.5. But my only concern is, again, so the Bills would cover 4 key numbers, right? 3, 4, 6, and 7. It would make for a perfect tease. I just don't trust. I don't trust Buffalo. I don't trust their defense. I don't trust their coach. It's hard for me in the playoffs to say, hey, the team can't stop the run and their coach is questionable, yet I'm going to bet on them. Like, that doesn't sound like a winning plan. Ravens, on the other hand, I can move it to +4, but I could see the Bills in a game where they're tied in the fourth quarter, having the ball last and going down the field and winning the game. And then we lose. And I just don't want to have to play the guessing game.
I feel you. Makes sense. All righty. So let's round the show out with our weekly can't miss rants. Mine is more of a pet peeve than it is a rant this week, BK. I don't know how active you are on social media, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, whatever. But notoriously, Facebook tends to give out all these, hey, wouldn't this be a great trade for this NBA team? And it gets on my nerves. I know you have to fill a spot and you have to attempt to be engaging and all of that stuff. But my thing is, it would be okay if any of the trades ever actually happened. Like all of and it's always something to do with my team too, which I also don't like. If the Lakers give up Rui Hachimura and give up Austin Reeves and give up a first round pick in 2029, they can get Bradley Beal. I think not. We'll pass. Thank you so very much. It's always like, first of all, it's trades that would 99.9 times out of 10 never happen. It's like pipe dream trades, and it's aggravating. Would it be nice to get Kevin Durant for a 2029 first round pick and 5 bench players? Sure it would, but it's never going to happen. So what are we doing here? Like it's. I know it's me, not them. I get it. It's just aggravating to me with all these fake trades and then even some people go as far as to make it look as if a trade happened. I don't know why, but they do. So just stop it. Like, talk about what you've heard, not what you think as far as trades are concerned, unless you're literally labeling it as this is the trade that I think they should do versus a, hey, this is, there's talks out there about, no one's talking about that. You're lying. You're trying to get clicks. That's all you're doing right now. Tell the truth to stay in the church. That's all I got.
I love it. So mine, who's our favorite baseball team, Zay?
Our favorite baseball team is the Yankees.
I've not said a lot.
Mostly by the tribe. Well, they're not the tribe anymore, the Guardians.
I've not said too much about our Yankees lately. So I'm going to start the new year off with a message. All offseason, I heard after losing Juan Soto that we as the Yankees were going to be all in. And it started out great with some of the moves they made. They did a lot of great things and they improved the team. But I'm confused. And when I say this, please know I'm not. I'm confused how our infield needs help. And Bregman is still out there. And we don't have him. Who's playing third? Is it Chisholm? Okay, great. Then we don't have a second baseman. Oh, Chisholm's playing second? Great. We don't have anyone to play third. I must be confused because all in means all in. Those aren't my words. That's the owner and the GM's words. So all in doesn't mean sort of all in or I kind of wannabe. Santander is still available. Jack Flaherty, a starting pitcher, is available, which, by the way, would open the door to trade Stroman and get value back for him to help your infield. Pete Alonso is still available. How about him playing first base? Oh, gee, how about Bregman? How about him playing third? A Gold Glove winning third baseman, who, by the way, has power, who, by the way, also plays well in the postseason. Yes, I know. We all hate the Astros because they're a bunch of cheaters and he was on the team. I'm well aware of all these things. Here's the deal. No world title since 2009. I want to win the title. Yes, I know I still have Aaron Boone. And hope to God if we make the World Series, someone puts him in a locker for 7 games. But in any case, get off your ass and sign these players and truly be all in. Don't tell me you're going to do it. Show me. And that's the truth.
And that pretty much wraps it up for us for this evening. We'll be back to you with the wrap up on Wednesday. And then we'll be back to you on next Friday again with the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast.
And by the way, Zay, I want to take this moment to say, I don't care what their team is for the moment. Hail to the damn Redskins. Let's go.
Look, don't bring back the curse that they just got rid of.
We got new ownership and a new coach and a great quarterback. We're good.
We will holler at y'all on next week. And remember, good people, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Later, y'all.